Looking for a simple explanation of some of the newer technologies being used in accounts payable, including blockchain, crypto, RPA, etc. Stick around for some basic explanation and some real-time examples.
Welcome to the AP Now podcast, the podcast that covers trends, insights, and emerging issues impacting every accounts payable function.
So within today's sessions, my goal today is to introduce these technologies to you if you don't already know them. I can't make you an expert, even if I wanted to. I couldn't do that, and obviously we don't have enough time. But the goal here is to get you to think about them and perhaps do additional reading on your own or talking to people. And so get you thinking about, hey, how could these be used in our organization? And hopefully you'll have a little bit of time to plan. So that's our goal today. Or at least my goal, my mission that I decided to accept. So let's start off with the basics, and I really mean the basics, okay? As I've already said, this session is not going to make you an expert, but hopefully it will give you a basis so that you can at least discuss the topics and identify them. I like to call it the speed dating or the Cliff Notes version, okay, because we're just going to, you know, short time on each one, and hopefully we'll all be up to at least, you know, step one, if you will, when we're done. And we're going to talk about blockchain and cyber currencies, one of which is Bitcoin. We're going to then turn our attention to artificial intelligence, robotic process automation, and perhaps some app-related services. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about bots, because I think that's something we all need to, you know, get a little bit more familiar with. And then again, because I think it's so important, some of the technology-based frauds, which they all seem to be lately. All right. So let's start off with blockchain. Blockchain, a growing list of records in each individual record is a block, okay, and then you put them all together and you have a blockchain. They are linked together by something called cryptography, which I wouldn't even attempt to explain. And each block will contain a cryptographic hash of the previous block, so all the information that went before it, a timestamp, and transaction data. And so over time, you build up your blockchain that has all the data in it that you might need for whatever the particular transaction is. And we'll see, for example, how Walmart and Tesla have already started to use this. The important thing with blockchain is resistant to modification of the data. So you know, once it's there, and nobody can change it, so it's kind of authentic, if you will. Now, the next thing I'm going to talk about very briefly is cryptography. Now, you heard me say before that the technique used with blockchain was cryptography, and so cryptocurrency. I'm on the wrong track. So cryptocurrency is a digital or virtual currency designed to work as a medium of exchange. And I have a link there for you if you want to read more about it. I'm heading toward Bitcoin. That's where I'm going with this. So this link is an article. It's called, you know, A Guide for Beginners. Now, what can you do with cryptocurrencies? You can do a lot of things. You can buy goods, you can invest, and of course, if you can buy goods, that means you can accept them. And you can also what they call mine, and you get cryptocurrency by mining, and that's a process that you go through to create the cryptocurrency. Again, I've shared all that I know on that with you. I cannot tell you how to do it. Now, you know, we probably don't run into this, or most of you don't run into it that often in the space that we all live in and that we work in. But you should be aware that there are over 100 different cryptocurrencies, the biggest being, of course, Bitcoin. But there are a whole bunch of others, and in size order, if you will, I have a few of them up here. You can see the market capitalization for Bitcoin is 115 billion. That's a B, that's not a mistake. And then you can see the others, okay? You know, there's Bitcoin, and then there's everybody else. And even, you know, looking at these numbers, which are very recent, you know, the fifth largest is only, you know, is about 4% of the Bitcoin market, and then the rest are lower and lower. I kind of get a kick. One of the ones is called Ripple, so I think that's amusing. I don't know if you will or you won't. Now, Bitcoin is one such cryptocurrency, and it uses peer-to-peer technology. Now, people sometimes, you know, they object a lot to Bitcoin for a variety of reasons. And one of the reasons is that there's no central authority or banks that kind of oversees the process. And the value fluctuates almost kind of like the stock market fluctuates. And so when I was putting this together, I got online and I looked up the value of one Bitcoin, which I have to admit, before I started putting this stuff together, I didn't really know what a Bitcoin was worth. I mean, I'd heard about it. I kind of knew what it was. But on October 8th, which was just a few days ago, one Bitcoin at this particular time of day was worth $6,617. Okay. So obviously, you'll see transactions that are fractions of bitcoins, because that's kind of a big number. So how do you account for Bitcoin? I wouldn't even, you know, attempt to address that in any sort of a thorough way. I have an article for you to read here if you're interested. It was put together by PricewaterhouseCoopers. Okay. And basically, for the accountants in here who are familiar with these terminologies, I just share this with you. You should account it not as a currency, but what's called an indefinite lived asset. So you're going to, when you include it in your financial statements, this is what you'll do until we get some definitive guidelines, which I'm sure will come at some point. Okay. All right. Enough about cryptocurrencies. We're going to turn our attention now to something that at least some of us knew a little bit more about, and that was artificial intelligence. And, you know, simple description of artificial intelligence is it describes intelligent behavior that's performed by machines rather than by humans. So the machine is programmed to do some of the things that we can do, and it's been getting better and better and better. Okay, if you have, you know, like if you use Siri on your smartphone, or we have Alexa or any of the others, you know, sometimes the results were less than optimal. And I mean, there were a few times it was a miracle I didn't throw my cell phone, but I couldn't. But it's getting better and better, and they're getting smarter and smarter. So some of the common applications for AI that kind of operate behind the scenes, if you will, you can see spam filters, plagiarism checkers. When you deposit a check using your mobile phone, using your smartphone, it's being used now to make consumer credit decisions. Not so much yet, but with emphasis on yet in the B2B world. Facebook's using it. You can see all these. So there's a lot of different applications for common applications, if you will, for AI in kind of the world that we live. Now, there are also some not so common applications. Two or three days ago, I mean, really, really very, very recently, I was reading an article about employees who have automated their jobs. And they've not automated their jobs as part of their assignment from their boss, but they work remotely and they have automated their jobs, programmed using AI and whatever else is around that they know how to use. And so that basically their job, their computer or this new automation that they have created does their job, and you know, and maybe they work 15 minutes a day. Now, it'll come as no surprise to you when I was reading that article that nobody wanted to be quoted by name, okay? And in fact, one of the people who was quoted said, He actually did two things. He automated his job, so he only had 15 minutes of work. And then he created a program so that if anybody got online to look at his computer, you know, remotely to see what he was doing, it would look like he was working. So that's, you know, another thing. I mean, I looked at that. Everybody looks at it differently. I was discussing it with my husband, and I thought, well, you know, you could have three or four jobs then. As long as you had three or four computers set up and you were organized. So, you know, we'll start to see more of that. Not a great deal more, but it's interesting. And of course, the debate at that point is also who owns the technology for that automation? Is it the company or is it the employer? And the general consensus, not that this has ever been tested in court, is that the company owns it because the employee did it while they were under contract to that particular employer. Okay, Google Translate and Google Maps also obviously use AI. Self-driving cars, which you know aren't here yet, but appear to be coming faster and faster. When Amazon sends you those emails with those recommended for you lists, they are also using AI. Clearly, a little bit more work has to be done there, but they are pretty good. Sometimes the recommendations are you know, spot on. And in fact, Amazon has increased sales quite a bit because of it. I forget the numbers, but they had an analysis in there. I always chuckle when I get them when it's a present that I've bought for somebody else, especially like if it's a younger child or, you know, my son or nephew or somebody like that, because I'm looking at these recommendations and I'm thinking, not really. So a little bit of work, but still. And I don't know if any of you have read about, you probably have, one of the Amazon stores. They refer to them as Amazon Go, I believe. And you go in, you pick out what you want, and you leave. You don't have to go through the checkout. You never take your credit card out. And so many believe that this is the wave of shopping in the future. So it will be interesting. The other benefit, by the way, of those Amazon Go stores is the belief is that they will virtually eliminate retail fraud and slippage, and which, you know, common inventory problems. So, you know, we've talked a lot in general about all these different things. What does this mean for us? What does it mean for AP, and what does it mean for accounting? Okay, clearly, or I think it's pretty clear, that the work that we do is a match made in heaven with some of these new services. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next section of this talk, but I think there are a lot of pretty clear implications for us. Now, there's been quite a few disruptive services around, and new ones continually appear. And I believe that these are a way of life, and they all tend to be app-driven. So most of us are familiar with Uber and Lyft, okay? But depending upon, we're probably, or at least if you're me, you're familiar with Square, and also PayPal here, which I use at a small company. These are all driven by apps, as I'm sure, you know, Apple Wallet is. And we kind of just, we take it as an accepted way of life. Grubhub, you know, with food delivery, and now Bird and Lime and a few others who are doing renting motorized scooters. That seems to be the newest trend to help people get around big cities. So a lot of these app-related services, are we going to use them in our business life, and if so, how? And you know, many times you'll say, no, we're not going to use that. That's what people first said, honestly, when Uber and Lyft came out. No, we're not going to let our employees use that. But we all know that virtually all companies have employees using Uber and Lyft. Some have them using Airbnb. I'm quite interested to see how the Bird, Lime, motorized scooter situation plays out. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is bots. They're kind of the next step in robots, and it's basically a software robotic device. It will automate tasks and basically do what a robot would do, but without the physical robot, because you don't need it. You don't need to have something. I sometimes like to call it an app on steroids, and the reason people are so crazy about bots is because a bot is, on average, can do 15 minutes worth of human work in 1 minute without all the issues related to humans. Okay, they don't get tired, they don't make mistakes, etc. Okay, when you marry AI with bots, you have robotic process automation. This is software that emulates human execution, and typically they use the bots because they're mimicking human behavior, but you don't need a physical action. So the picture I have there actually comes from an exhibit that was at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, and it is a robot, and that robot, it has been programmed to clean windows, okay, and it will actually climb that thing and, you know, clean the windows. So that's a robot versus a bot, which is what we're going to get in our world to do some of the accounting and AP functions. So how do you figure out when RPA is likely to be used and when it's not? So one of the guidelines is if you can flowchart it, it might be, or there's a good chance it will be, a potential RPA application. And so I just throw that out there because you want to keep in the back of your mind, okay, what's going on, what's going to go on in AP. And I'm going to go, we're going to have our next question, and which of the following have you used? And I have to launch it. Hello. Okay, and Bitcoin, the motorized scooters, the Amazon store. I'm dying to go in one of them, by the way. More than one of the above, or none of the above? Okay, well, I'm jealous of the people who have been in the Amazon stores. I'll tell you that right now. I have been on a motorized scooter. Okay, I'm not sure if I'd be comfortable riding it to work. Okay, so 90% of you have basically said none of the above. And the big winner is the Amazon Go stores. So, okay, but I bet you if we came back and asked this question a year ago, a year from now, we would see more on the motorized scooters. So 3% Bitcoin, 3% the motorized scooters, 5% Amazon, and as you can see, most people said nothing, okay, which is kind of what I expected, but, you know, I've been wrong before, so okay, I just want to talk 1 minute. It doesn't 100% fit in with the rest of this talk, but I think it's an important issue to address, and that's technology-based frauds. We are seeing a ton of them, and these are basically frauds or deception for personal gain utilizing technology, and they are utilizing technology in droves, and it can be for money, or it can be for anything of value. And there is continued innovation, if you will, in this area. And we'll talk a little bit when we get to the application section about some of the frauds that are going on. But they are relentless in the way they are innovating. The typical demands had been a demand for somebody to do an immediate wire or an ACH transaction or to share some sort of confidential information. The problem with these frauds is when they occur, recourse is difficult because one of your employees actually committed the fraud and, you know, you're kind of stuck. So this is where education and verification are critical, and I can't say it enough, the verification, it is important. It's, you know, it's better to ask for forgiveness if you make a mistake and you call somebody and you say, hey, did you authorize this, or did you really want me to make this change, than it is to make the mistake and, you know, the money's gone. The best piece of advice I have is to be suspicious of everything and everyone, and especially anything that's out of the ordinary. One of the newest ones that I heard about, the next wave seems to be going to individual employees and asking them to make a smallish transaction on behalf of the organization. And by smallish, the two that I saw, one was $2,000 and one was $2,400. And again, you would have thought people wouldn't have fallen for this, but in both cases they did. One, money did not go out, but one it did. And that's just the two that I know of. And, you know, $2,000 might not seem like much, but if it's money that has to come out of your pocket instead of your employer's pocket, it could be. Okay, so let's look at some current applications. There's still, when we talk about especially Bitcoin and blockchain, there's still not complete agreement and there's not complete standardization. And especially, you know, we talked about there's over 100 different types of cryptocurrencies. So, you know, God forbid, like anything else, they all did it the same. Nope. So there's not complete standardization, and so you have to look, you know, to your accountants for guidance, and ultimately we'll have rules, but we're just not there, you know, rules that are compliant with GAAP. So I want to start off by talking about blockchain. We're starting to see the emergence of several companies who are offering what's called blockchain as a service, which you will start to see abbreviated as capital B, small a, capital S, kind of like software as a service. And I don't think that you'll be all surprised to see that the, you know, the big, or at least the initial offers of this, offerers of this technology, Amazon, IBM, and Microsoft. Not a big a big surprise there. Early adopters of blockchain include Tesla and Porsche, the two car companies. Now, I think the way that Tesla is using it is very interesting, and we will see some further applications along this line. If you told me, how are you going to use blockchain to help you with your conflict mineral reporting, I'd probably be sitting here scratching my head for quite some time. But because of the blocks and the information related to the particular commodity in question at every step of the way, Tesla is using it to trace sourcing and to ensure ethical, to trace where the products came from, to help it ensure that it has ethical sourcing. And of course, this can be used then if you need to do conflict mineral reporting. Okay, so pretty innovative way to do it. Okay, but they are not alone. They are not alone. Okay, the food supply companies are also looking at it because they think it can help improve transparency and eliminate unnecessary reconciliation efforts. Now, here in the United States, food safety is not a big issue. It probably should be, but we don't make as big a deal about it as the Europeans do. And you can see Walmart, Carrefour, Nestle and Unilever are exploring blockchain capabilities so that they can test food and for traceability and safety. And think about when there's a recall and, you know, Walmart, for example, has to recall all the lettuce or whatever it is that was out because there was an outbreak, you know, in one small location. Well, if they have all the sourcing and there is the outbreak and they can figure out where that particular lettuce, let's say it was the culprit, if they can figure out where, you know, which farm that started at, well, then they don't have to recall it all. They can just recall parts of it. So Walmart will be starting what they call a food traceability initiative. And what this is going to do is make suppliers who sell leafy vegetables to either Walmart or Sam's Club in the U.S. from fields and farms start to collect the information about the location, the harvest time, etc. And they will upload that into IBM Food Trust Network, and they'll have to start doing this by January 31st. So again, you can trace where the food came from should there be a problem. There probably are a whole lot of other applications like this, but this is just the start. Okay, that was Blockcoin. Let's see who's using Bitcoin. And if I remember correctly from the numbers at the beginning, the people were most familiar with AI and then Bitcoin. Okay, people had a better understanding of it. Currently, Ernst & Young and PricewaterhouseCoopers are accepting Bitcoins as payments. I don't know if they're accepting it from everyone or just their Bitcoin-type clients. But when I was doing this and I was, you know, looking through the internet, I saw two headlines, okay? And the reason I picked these two headlines, I saw a number of them, but, you know, because they're at the opposite ends of the food chain or the auto chain, if you will. In one case, we see a Rolls-Royce, Bugatti, and Bentley dealership now starting to accept Bitcoin. And then we see an auto fair dealership in New Hampshire who arranged a sale of a 2012 Ford Fusion, and a payment was accepted using Bitcoin. So we are starting to see some transactions. But again, you know, there are also a whole list of other suppliers other companies who will accept Bitcoin as payments. And I've got, you know, the names up here. And as you can see, most of these, you know, are companies that will do business. They're in the B2C space. They may be in the B2B space, like Microsoft and Intuit also. But, you know, the majority of their business is with individual consumers. And these companies now are all accepting Bitcoin. Whether they are accepting it kind of as, you know, a publicity, you know, or a marketing gimmick, I don't know. But the answer is they can accept it. They are set up to do so. Now, you might be wondering, how do you make a payment with Bitcoin? Well, Skoda Minotti, which is an accounting firm based in Cleveland, has also decided that they are willing to accept Bitcoin. And you notice, I keep saying Bitcoin, not cryptocurrency. But in theory, if they're taking Bitcoin, they will be able to, at some point, take other cryptocurrencies. And what they do is they set up a page with a payment link. So just like you might send one of your customers a payment link to pay with a credit card, think about it like that. This is a secure page where they can pay with their cryptocurrency, and the page is set up so that they can enter the necessary information and complete the transaction. Do I think that most of your companies are going to set up to do this? Not in the real short term, but, you know, eventually a certain portion of the population will, especially if you have a lot of clients or you have a lot of customers, rather, technology type customers. What's going on with artificial intelligence in the real world? Well, we're already seeing it being integrated into the invoice automation models that are already out there. It's a way for the vendors to kind of beef up the functionality of their offering, and it's already happening. One of the things that we also see is when you start reading about startups and funding, there's a lot of money going towards all sorts of AI applications. Now, yes, they all won't be successful, without a doubt, but a number of them will. And so we're seeing, you know, funding go into these startups, including, by the way, some of them in the AP space. And I kind of thought it was interesting, Grant Thornton, which is, you know, like that stodgy accounting consulting type firm, has already hired a managing director of Applied Artificial Intelligence. And I would imagine that they're not the only one. So let's take a look at invoice automation, because let's face it, if we're in the AP space, that's the topic that's near and dear to our hearts, and see how it stacks up. Where is it going? The truth of the matter is, invoice automation has been with us for about 20 years. Okay, I can remember, you know, seeing my first presentations and absolutely being blown away by it because it was something entirely new. When it started, it was very expensive. Not so much anymore, okay? But despite all that, despite the fact that it's often available software as a service, you know, SaaS, you can see that the overall implementation of it has not been huge. Only 7% of the companies that we surveyed at the beginning of this year have automated over 90% of their invoices. So there's still huge opportunity out there, and the adoption of it in AP has not been as fast as I would have predicted 20 years ago, especially given the way the cost has come down. So how can you use RPA in AP? Obviously the invoice processing, but it's also very useful in onboarding new vendors. If you can take the human out of it, especially if you have an online portal of sort. Down the road, we expect to see it being used for tracking and following up when somebody hasn't sent an approval in or whatever. Hopefully we'll do a little bit better than the automatic escalations. They're already working on exception processing, so that, yes, you know, the invoice processing is automated, but then taking it one step further and at least helping to resolve disputed invoices, and of course fraud detection. So where will RPA likely to be used? And this report's already 2 years old, and it came from Deloitte. It was one of the first reports that came out, and you know, they interviewed quite a few people for this. And you can see that most people, when they look at the accounting function, right off the bat, the two ones that come right off the, you know, the top of the head are accounts payable, T&E, maybe fixed assets and general ledger. When I think about this, by the way, I also think that billing is another natural no-brainer application, and perhaps cash application, which, you know, might be credit administration. So with these technologies, as with every other technology, you know, that's come around, and in general, management wants people who can identify weaknesses or efficiency opportunities or inefficiencies, create strategies that will help them eliminate these problems, and implement these strategies. Okay, that hasn't changed. That's been with us. Management has wanted that, you know, probably for as long as I've been working, and even longer. Okay, so if you can get your headset around these new technologies and figure out how your organization can use them, you'll be in, I don't want to say the driver's seat, but you'll definitely be better positioned than you were. Just want to talk one or two more minutes about fraud. And part of the reason I make such a big to-do about this is that I know in several instances of AP professionals who've lost their jobs because they didn't do one tiny little step, mostly verify a change of bank account request, and it's critical that this not happen at your firm. And again, remember, some of these new frauds that are coming out now are focused on individuals, and trying to get them to spend $2,000 or $3,000 of their own money. And then, you know, the question comes down to several: is the company going to reimburse them? They probably have no legal obligation to. Are they or aren't they? That's question number one. And question number two, when it becomes apparent that this was a fraud and you step back and you look at this, and, you know, the first thing is, oh, my God, how could I have fallen for this? So, you don't want it to happen, obviously, from a financial standpoint, but you also don't want to have it happen from an image standpoint. You don't want them to think of, like, you know, oh, look, how could she have fallen for that? Well, yeah, when you step back, it's like, oh, how could I have fallen for that? But I did. Okay. And, you know, I'm sure all of us, or at least I'll just speak for myself, I know I've done some things when I look back and I'm thinking, you know, that was really stupid, Mary. How did you not see that? This session was just one part of a five-part special series, which run from episodes 101 to 105. for Accounts Payable Technology Week. We encourage you to listen to them all. If you are watching on YouTube, a link will appear to the left shortly. As always, we appreciate your subscribes, your comments, and your thumbs up.